Okay, so let me begin by recalling some of the results that we will use today. So first of all, we introduce the notion of a string field, and this turned out to be an arbitrary element. A general string field configuration corresponds to an arbitrary element of H1, which is just the vector space of states of the boundary conformal field theory of Ghose number 1. Then we wrote down the action for the string field theory, which is a map from H1 to the space of real numbers, and this was given by 1 over G square G. Here is just a real number, which is this open string coupling constant. The definition of the VP's Z inner product was given as V of 0 on the upper half plane, where I is the map, conformal map Z goes to minus 1 over Z, and this symbol simply denotes that this is the conformal transform of A by this conformal map I. We also wrote down the expression for the star product, and this was given by computing a 3-point correlation function on upper half plane. We gave explicit expressions for F1, F2, and F3. So Fi of Z was given by G of Hi of Z. G was the map I times 1 minus W over 1 plus W H1 of Z is 1 plus Iz over 1 minus Iz the 2/3 Now, given this and QB, I should have mentioned this is the BRST charge. Now, QB and star product satisfies various properties which I'll not write down in detail, but using those properties we claim that one can easily show that first of all there is a gauge invariance of the action. Which says that delta S is equal to 0 if delta phi takes this form. Where lambda is an element of H0. A state of Ghose number 0, and this represents what we will call the infinitesimal gauge transformation parameters. We also wrote down the equation of motion, and this is derived by requiring that delta s equal to 0 for arbitrary delta phi. And this gave the requirement that q be phi plus phi star phi equal to 0. And then finally we said that if phi naught is a solution of the equations of motion, and if we define psi as phi minus phi naught, then we can write A sub phi as A sub phi naught, which is just a constant, plus S tilde of psi, and S tilde has very similar form to the original action. S tilde of psi is given by minus 1 over g square half psi q psi plus 1/3 and q is the operator defined as follows. Q on any state A is given by q B on A plus phi 0 star A. And then we also said that Q satisfies the same properties as QB. Q satisfies identities. Similar to QB. Okay. In particular, the identity that we will be using today is that Q square was 0. So today what we will do is to try to use this action, the string field theory action, to verify the various conjectures involving tachyon condensation. I wrote down explicitly what they mean in the language of string field theory yesterday, and I will write them down again as and when we discuss each conjecture at time. Now the first thing we will do today is to try to see in what sense this action describes a field theory. The action that I wrote down to begin with, because after all, when you talk about a field theory, the fields are, some functions on which, fields take value, fields are appear as some functions of some on some space. Okay, in particular, in this case, if you have a D, DP plus DP brain, then one would expect that a field theory on a DP brain will be described by P plus one dimensional field theory. So where are those coordinates? Where are the fields in the conventional sense? Because as I have defined, the string field phi is just an element of the Hilbert space, of the state space. And this can be seen without too much effort by choosing a specific basis in this Hilbert, in the state space. So what we will do now is to write down the component form of the SFT action. So we choose a basis of in H. Let's say chi 1 alpha is a basis in H1. Okay, this one simply reflects the fact that we are choosing a basis in H1. Okay. Then we can expand the string field in this basis. And we can now simply substitute this in the action that I wrote down there, okay, and write things in terms of the components phi alpha. So if we do that, the string field action takes the form minus 1 over g square a alpha beta phi alpha phi beta plus 1/3 c alpha beta gamma phi alpha phi beta phi gamma. Okay. Where these are just constant, this is simply chi 1 alpha qb chi 1 beta, and this is again a constant given by f1 dot chi 1 alpha 0 f2 dot okay. And of course repeated indices are summed over. So in this form we simply think of these phi's as the variables that describe a given string field configuration, and these are just constants. Okay, now let's focus on D brains in flat space time. Okay. So consider DP brain in flat space time. Okay. And let's denote by x0 to xp as x parallel. Okay. These are the directions along the D-brain. Okay. And x transverse will denote the directions transverse to the D-brain. Now in this case, when you try to choose a basis of states in the state space of open strings on the D-brain, okay, this index alpha, okay, will contain a set of continuous indices, which is simply the momentum of the state along the D-brain. Okay. Because an open string on a D-brain can move along the D-brain. So when you try to characterize the states of the open string on a D-brain, you have to characterize it by the momentum that the state carries. So this set of indices alpha will now split into a set of indices k mu, okay, or I should say k parallel mu. Okay. And then besides this, there are a set of indices r which are discrete. Okay, these come from various oscillator excitations. And this means that the variables phi alpha that we have introduced, since alpha has part of the indices as continuous indices, these are really functions of these continuous variables k mu. Okay. So what we have been calling phi alpha should really be thought of as phi r as a function of k naught to k mu, okay, where r takes values of a discrete set. Okay. It's an infinite set, but it's a discrete set. But each phi r is a function of these p variables. Sorry, this is k on a DP brain, each phi r is a function of p plus 1 variables. Okay. And it's these variables that we interpret as a Fourier transform of fields phi r, let's call it phi r tilde, depending on x naught to xp. Okay. And these, it is in this sense that string field theory describes the field theory of infinite number of fields. Okay. Because now this index r runs over discrete values, okay, that's the field index, and each phi r depends on the p plus 1 coordinates as it should if it's a p plus 1 dimensional field theory. And sum over alpha gets replaced by sum over r and integral over k. So when I mean this form of the action, for example, includes an integral over the momentum indices, which is nothing but the integral over dp plus 1 x that we will have when you write down the action of a field theory. So when we get a solution of string field theory and try to interpret this as a conventional classical solution in a field theory, okay, you have to make this translation, okay, to see what that particular solution represents. Okay. So when we say that a solution corresponds to a lump, okay, it's localized along certain direction, okay, that says something about its Fourier transform. Okay. Or you take a solution in string field theory, expand it in the basis, okay, Fourier transform each component, and then try to interpret that solution. Okay, are there any questions? Okay, so let me now discuss some issues about normalization before I go ahead. Okay. And
simultaneously?
No, you take one particular P brain, okay, say D25 brain, and you do this. Okay, it will be a 25 plus 1 dimensional field theory. But then, according to those conjectures, that field theory should have other solutions which represents all the lower dimensional D brains. But the field theory is, I mean, specified on one particular D brain.
But your alphas are supposed to run over a basis for the entire Hilbert space.
On of open strings on that particular D brain. See, alpha runs over the Hilbert space, the vector space of open string, the states of open string. But what are the states of open string depends on which D brain they live on. So once you fix a D brain, that is fixed. In this case, yes. For the bosonic case, I mean, I think you can get it. We'll see this tomorrow. Okay, how to get more 25 brains. Okay, so what is the issue of normalization? The issue of normalization is simply that when we talk about a correlation function on upper half plane in some conformal field theory, let's say you have some operators, so 1 to n, okay, there is an ambiguity in fixing the overall normalization of this correlation function. Okay. So, ambiguity in fixing the overall normalization . Now this of course doesn't affect anything, because if there is an ambiguity in fixing the overall normalization, that can simply be absorbed in the coupling constant. Okay. Because if you remember, the string field action had a 1 over g squared in front. Okay, so if both correlation functions have this overall normalization ambiguity, it can simply be absorbed in the coupling constant. But we need to fix it to proceed, because we want to do specific calculation, so we need to fix this. Now, normally the natural object, the natural correlation function which you will use to fix it is this. Okay, if you say what this is, then everything else is fixed. But this of course is 0, because as we saw that the total host number has to be 3. Okay, unless the total host number is 3, this is 0. So one modifies this slightly. Okay. So one introduces a set of modes for the ghost field C that I talked about. So we expand C of Z in this form. Okay, this class one has to do with the conformal weight of C, but you can expand an analytic function in this form. Okay. And then if we require that C of Z on the vacuum is regular, as Z goes to 0, okay, you can easily see that this implies that Cn on the vacuum should be 0 for n greater than or equal to 2. Okay, because for n equal to 2, this becomes a Z to the minus 1, and that is unacceptable. So C 2 must annihilate the vacuum, and so on. So using this fact, okay, the fact that C0, C1, and C-1 doesn't annihilate the vacuum, the natural way to specify the normalization is by specifying this. Okay, if we specify this, then everything else is fixed. Okay, so this needs to be specified. And again, the natural choice for this would be 1. Okay, if we could fix this to 1, that would be the natural choice. But when you have continuous indices like the momentum indices, that cannot be done. Okay, and to see why that cannot be done, okay, let's define the state k as e to the I k dot x parallel at 0 on the vacuum. So this is just the state, the momentum carrying state k that is created out of the vacuum by applying this vortex operator. Okay. K is a p plus 1 dimensional momentum. Okay. So if one calculates this object, okay, then by momentum conservation, this will be proportional to delta of k plus k prime. Okay. And it's a standard convention to take it to be 2 pi to the p plus 1. This is a p plus 1 dimensional delta function. Okay. So this is the way we normalize a vacuum when there are continuous momentum indices. If you don't like delta functions, then the way to do it is that you simply assume that all directions tangential to the D plane are compact. Okay, in which case there are all the momentum indices are discrete, and then you can normalize it to 1 or whatever you like. Okay. So if we now set k equal to 0, you get back the vacuum. Okay. But we see that vacuum is, this normalization is 2 pi to the p plus 1 delta p plus 1 0. Okay, which of course is divergent, but in quantum field theory there is a standard way to interpret this. This is simply the volume of the space-time tangential to the dp plane. Okay. So this you take to be vp plus 1. Okay. Probably I should take here. Thank you. okay, where V, P plus 1 is just the volume of space-time. Parallel to the DP plane. Okay. See, if, for example, you have taken the tangential directions to be compact, okay, then Vp plus 1 will be finite, okay, and that would reflect the fact that we could have, in that case, the momentum level gains are discrete rather than continuous, and we could have chosen a Kronecker delta. Yeah. The physical tachyon is?
Physical tachyon is not denoted zero, but rather
C1 on zero, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Because zero here is the SL2R invariant vacuum. So once you have fixed this normalization convention, then the action is completely fixed. Okay, now there is no further ambiguity in the redefinition of the coupling constant. Okay. And now it makes sense to ask, okay, what is the expression for the tension of the D-plane, okay, in terms of the coupling constant. And this is a result I'll write down without giving the details of the derivation. So one can show that using this normalization, the tension of the D-plane is given by 1 over 2 pi square g square. Okay, so there is a definite relation between the tension and the coupling constant of the D-plane. Okay. And the logic which goes behind this derivation is simply that if we consider a D-plane which moves very slowly, okay, then we expect a kinetic term, okay, the action should contain a kinetic energy term for the D-plane, which is simply half times the mass of the D-plane times the square of the transverse velocity. Okay. So you simply look for that term in the string field theory action. Okay. You take the string field theory action, okay, that is supposed to describe the full dynamics of the D-plane. So that must contain a term which is the kinetic energy term for the D-plane for slowly moving D-planes. Okay. And by comparing that term in string field theory to just half mv square, okay, you can derive this formula. Okay. So that's the logic which goes behind deriving this. Okay, so now let's go ahead and try to look for solutions. Yeah. They do enter, exactly, because when you calculate the value of the action, okay, the normalization is important, right, because you are trying to find half mv square, and there that normalization factor enters, exactly. So if you choose a different normalization, you'll get a different answer here. Okay, so now let's first look for the tachyon vacuum solution. Now, if we look for if we want to look for tachyon vacuum solution, we can look for space-time independent solution. Or equivalently, zero momentum solution. Not necessarily d equal to 25. Start with any dp plane, right? The fields carry momentum along the dp plane, and you want to construct a uniform solution where the whole dp plane has condensed to the vacuum. Because you are considering d planes in flat space time. Okay, but there is a generalization of these two deep brains in Kaur space time, which I'll not have time to discuss. So let's just fix a specific deep brain in flat space time and try to do this. Okay. So this basically means that these fields phi r of k mu that I introduced, these can be, we can look for solutions where this is simply a delta function in the momentum. Okay. In terms of string fields, what this amounts to is to choose a string field, not a most general string field, but just a string field that's a linear combination of zero momentum states. So this is a basis in zero momentum subspace of H1. And so if we now try to compute this object, it's clear that since the fields carry all zero momentum, okay, each of these correlation functions will simply have a volume factor outside, because you will get just a delta of 0, 2 pi to the p plus 1 delta of 0. So the volume factor simply will factor out. Okay. So I will rewrite this as minus 1 over g square times vp plus 1 times half phi qb phi prime plus 1/3 phi where the definition of the prime correlator is simply that they are 1 over p plus 1 times unprimed correlators, or the vacuum is normalized in terms of prime correlators as just 1. Okay, this is just a new definition, and it's just more convenient because since the volume factor just comes out of the whole thing for zero momentum string fields, we might as well pull it out explicitly, okay, and not have to talk about these volume factors afterwards. So this allows us to write a sub phi as minus 1 over g square curly v of phi, okay, where we define this as half and one important aspect of this object, there is a volume factor here, v of p plus 1. We have just pulled out the volume factor. Okay, just rewriting the same expression that we had there, except that whatever was in the square bracket, okay, I am defining to be a new function, okay, v of I. Okay. And this new function has the property, okay, that this has no free parameter. Okay, it simply involves numbers. Computation of this function just involves a set of numbers. Okay. And at this stage, it would seem like that those set of numbers do depend on what boundary conformal field theory you have chosen. But as I'll try to show later, that the final computation that one has to do, in fact, is totally universal. It doesn't even depend on what dBN you started with. But at this stage, since it involves calculating correlation function in the conformal field theory, it depends on what dBN you started with, but it doesn't depend on the coupling constant or the volume of space-time. Now, recall the statement of conjecture 1 in the language of string field theory, okay, which said that at the tachyon vacuum, okay, if phi naught denotes the tachyon vacuum solution, then S phi naught is given by this was the tension of dPBN. Okay. And this, as we have already said, is given by 1 over 2 pi square g square. So now, using this and this relation over here, we can write down the conjecture in terms of this function. Okay. And the conjecture simply takes the form minus 1 over g square vp plus 1 ep plus 1 e of phi naught equal to vp plus 1. Times 1 over 2 pi square g square. Okay. And so you see that both the volume as well as the coupling constant cancels from both sides. And what we end up with is a conjecture involving pure numbers. Okay. That this combination must be equal to 1. Now, let's look at some expansion involving the zero momentum field. In H1. Okay. So, typically the expansion, okay, will start from the lowest L0 eigenvalue and then go up. Okay. So, you'll have some phi 0 C1 on the vacuum plus phi 1 C0 on vacuum plus other terms. Okay, there are infinite number of terms, but we are always building things out of on the vacuum. Okay. So the task is to simply take this expansion, okay, substitute in the expression for this object that we have defined here. Okay, that will give an action which involves this infinite number of variables, which are the phi naught, phi 1, phi 2, etc. Okay, we have to find an extremum of that action in this infinite number of variables, and then evaluate the value of the action at that extremum. Okay, to check whether this conjecture is true or not. So this, of course, is a difficult task because we have to deal with infinite number of variables. Okay, so although it's a well-defined task, okay, you have an action in infinite number of a function of infinite number of variables, and you are simply trying to find an extremum of the function in those infinite number of variables and test a specific relation involving the value of the function at the extremum. Okay. So let's start by making a drastic approximation. Okay. So let's start by setting phi equal to phi naught c on a vacuum. Okay. Just simply try everything else. Okay. And see how far one can proceed. So if you substitute phi equal to phi naught c on 0 on the in the action, we can evaluate the normalized action. Okay. So this is half phi 0 square times 0 c minus 1 c 0 c minus 1 qb. C1 on vacuum, okay, plus 1 third phi 0 cube prime here . What I have used here is that C1 on the vacuum is C of 0 on the vacuum. So this means that C of x is the vortex operator associated with C1 on 0. Okay. I told you earlier that every state in the conformal field theory, in the boundary conformal field theory, has to be associated with the vortex operator. And this relation, which can be easily verified by the from the mode expansion of C that I wrote down, okay, implies that C of x is the vortex operator for C on 0. Okay, and that's the vortex operator that I have introduced here. Now, it's easy to evaluate both the terms. Okay. And since it's straightforward, let me just give a little bit of the details. Okay. In the first term, one can show that only the only part of QB that contributes is C0 L0, okay, plus other terms which don't contribute, simply by explicit computation one can say that these terms don't contribute. Okay. So if you put C0 L0 here, okay, and then C1 on 0 has L0 eigenvalue minus 1, so this term simply gives half phi naught square times minus 1. Okay. Because we are using now the normalization that C minus 1, C0, C1, the vacuum expectation value is 1. Okay. So this minus sign comes because this one has L0 eigenvalue minus 1. Now, what about this term? Okay, we have seen how to interpret this term. This is simply f1 prime of 0 inverse, f2 prime of 0 inverse, f3 prime of the inverse. Okay, the inverse sign comes because C has conformal weight minus 1. Okay, typically if you have fields phi here, you will get f1 prime of 0 to the power h, they are conformal weight of phi. Okay. And then we have a correlation function C of f1 0, C of f2 0, C of f3 0. Okay. And this correlation function, okay, using the same normalization convention that C minus 1, C0, C1 is 1, okay, can be computed to give F10 minus F20, F20 minus F30 times F10 minus F30. So now I have already given you the functions f1, f2, and f3. Okay, so you simply calculate the derivative, evaluate them at zero, put things back together, okay, and calculate what this number is. Okay. And what one finds is that this number here, okay, is 3 root 3 over 4 cube. Okay, by doing this computation. Are there any questions? This minus 1 over here? Oh, because this is C0, L0. Okay. And L0 on C10 gives you minus 1 on C10. Okay. Because this has negative L0 eigenvalue. Okay, so then we get mu of phi 0. Now there is only one variable. Minus half phi 0 square plus 1 third 3 root 3 over 4 cube phi 0 cube. Okay, if you plot this v versus phi, it has a shape like this. Okay, this is the point you are looking for. Okay. One can easily verify what this point is, because after all you are just solving this equal to 0. So this gives you the solution to be 4 over 3 root 3 cube. And then you simply substitute it here to find at the solution. And this is 2 pi square, sorry, let's calculate this whole thing, minus 2 pi square times this, because this is what we want to check if it's 1 or not. Okay. So this is 2 pi square times 1 sixth times 4 over 3 root 3 cube. Okay. And this turns out to be, when you calculate it numerically, it's like 0.684. So it's not quite 1, but it's not very far from 1. Okay, it's not 1/10 or 100, for example. Okay, it's on the ballpark of 1. So this is in fact the beginning of a systematic approximation scheme that allows us to solve this, attack this problem numerically. Okay, so what I'll do now is to say what is a systematic approximation scheme which lets us go beyond this just one field approximation. So this was first introduced by Kostolecki and Samuel. I don't have the exact reference, and then have been followed by various people. the best result today that I'll be quoting is due to Moeller and Taylor. So the idea is the following. Let's define the total velocity generator of the theory as a sum of the matter and the ghost velocity generators. Okay, these are the velocity generators. And now let's define the level of a state equal to L0 eigenvalue plus 1. Yeah.
Can you remind us what the motivation was for this ansatz in the first place?
For which ansatz? Yeah, I mean, we expanded, okay, we'll see what the motivation was when we write down the systematic approximation scheme. So when you write down the, when you choose a basis in order of increasing L0 eigenvalue, that's the lowest L0 eigenvalue state that you get. Okay, and then you have states of higher and higher L0 eigenvalues. Okay. So the idea is that by looking at taking just the lowest L0 eigenvalue state, okay, you get an answer which is this. So we define the level of a state to be the L0 eigenvalue of the state plus 1, okay. And this plus 1 is simply to make sure that C1 on vacuum, the state that we worked with, okay, that this has level 0, because this we already saw has L0 eigenvalue minus 1, and then you add plus 1, that has level 0, okay. We can work out give various examples of higher level states. Yeah, in some sense, exactly. Because the mass square of the field is basically the level. Okay, so tachyon has basically the L0 eigenvalue. So it's the mass square of the field plus 1. So as you increase the level, you are going to fields of higher and higher mass. Okay, that's one way to interpret this. Okay. So we already said that C1 on the vacuum has level 0. C0 on vacuum has level 1. C minus 1 on vacuum. Okay, there are other states of level 1. I am just writing down 1. C1 L matter minus 2 on vacuum, etc., have level 2, and so on. Okay, so you basically ordered the states according to the labels. And you expand the string field in order of increasing level. Okay, which basically means in order of increasing L0 eigenvalue of the corresponding state. Now with this, we define now a level A main approximation to this function V of phi. By saying that first of all, we keep all fields of level less than or equal to M. Okay, so M denotes the number up to which we will keep the fields. And then the second criteria, which in fact is not necessary to have a systematic approximation scheme, but it's very useful for numerical work, okay, that even with this restriction, we don't keep all the terms in the action, okay, but we keep only a subset of the terms. So keep only those terms in the potential, in the action for which the total level of all fields in the term is less than or equal to n. Okay. And you always take n to be larger than or equal to 2m, okay, just so that the quadratic term is present in order to keep quadratic term. Well, nobody really knows why it converges, except that this number 4 over 3 root 3 is less than 1. Okay, typically what happens is that you go to higher and higher order vertices, you get powers of this 4 over 3 root 3.
It's an expansion in the 4 over 3 root 3.
Okay. Yeah. That's all one can say right now. Okay, otherwise it's not clear why it works at all. That's true, yeah. Okay, but I think that's also growing exponentially. In fact, number of fields is also growing exponentially, but that grows as exponential of root n. Okay, whereas this grows, I think, exponentially in n. I mean, this decays exponentially in n.
Oh, what decays?
This one, yeah, because if you take 4 over 3 root 3 raised to the level, right, this is like e to the minus l log 3 root 3 over 4. So this coupling is decaying exponentially, whereas the number of fields at least is growing as exponential square root of the level. So okay, I don't know that makes any difference, but that's something we can keep in mind. Okay, so what I'll do is to first quote the results that are available and then give some details. Okay. First of all, it turns out that if you go to a slightly higher level, already the result improves a lot. Okay. If you go to, for example, level 2-4, okay, you already get an answer minus 2 pi square v of phi naught, which is like 0.95. Okay, whereas the expected answer is 1. Okay. So the best result at present is, as I said, due to Moeller and Taylor, okay, which is at level 10-20. Okay, so you keep all fields up to level 10 and all terms with total level below 20. And this gives minus 2 pi square v of phi naught to be 0.9991. Okay. So this clearly, shows that this result is most likely correct, but there is no analytic understanding of why this is correct. But this is a problem which, in principle, one should be able to tackle analytically, because, as I said, there are no free parameters. Okay, so in principle, there is just a combination of pure numbers which is giving you one on this side. Okay. But at present, there is no analytic understanding of why it works. Okay, let me just give. Yeah. 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 So far, up to 10-20, it's monotonically approaching 1 from below.
How many fields?
How many?
Fields are there?
I think 255 fields or something, right, at level 10?
No, I think this is a pretty naive program. I think Bernardo Rastelli and
Gaiotto, I think.
And yeah. Maybe,
they're using C++. I think they have gone up to level 1428. They have certainly gone, and they are trying to go beyond. Okay, so some details, okay, without too much of it. Okay. And the first point here is that one needs to fix a gauge. Now, the reason that one needs to fix a gauge is the following. Okay? That if we are solving the full or the complete string filter equations of motion, okay, then you can just try to look for the solution directly. Okay? But because of the gauge invariance, okay, this potential, this string field action has flat directions. Okay, just as a consequence of gauge invariance. Okay, so let's say that there is a gauge direction in which the potential has flat direction. But once you use level truncation, okay, this flat direction is lifted because the gauge invariance is not an exact symmetry of a level truncated action. Okay, it's an exact symmetry of the full action, but this flat direction becomes something like this in level truncation. So if you try to solve the full string filter equations of motion, okay, what you will find is that you will find some minimum in this flat direction, okay, which is a minimum just as a consequence of level truncation, but it should really be a flat direction. But then as you go from one level to next, okay, this minimum shifts around. Okay, there is no reason why this minimum should remain fixed. It's not a physical minimum anyway because it's supposed to be flat. So this minimum keeps shifting around as you go from one level to the next. Okay, so it's hard to control the expansion for, I mean, level by level if you allow this flat direction to be present. Okay, so the way you solve it is you choose a gauge slice, okay, so that this flat direction is explicitly lifted. Okay. Then you solve the equations of motion in that gauge slice. Okay. And after you have solved the equations of motion, after you have gotten a solution, you can now substitute back in the full set of equations of motion to check if the full set of equations of motion are satisfied or not. Okay. So you use gauge fixing as a tool to find the solution, but then you can use that to try to check the full string filter equations of motion are satisfied. Okay. And the gauge which has been used is the Siegel gauge, okay, where you simply require B naught phi to be 0. Okay. And then it has also been checked that if you use the solution now, okay, then try to make sure that all the other equations of motion which are gauge degrees of freedom, that those equations of motion are automatically satisfied. Okay, which means that it's a solution of the full set of equations of motion rather than just the gauge fixed action.
So the question I asked 2 days ago, then, where I asked about if condition V0 of the field equals 0, doesn't one, I said, have to impose that?
Oh, okay.
But now it's interesting. Now, yeah, we come back 2 lectures later, we are imposing
that. Yeah, see, for the closed string, there is a condition B0 minus B0 bar on 0, mm-hmm, on the state equal to 0. And that's not a gauge condition. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a condition that you have to impose on the fields. This is not a requirement. Okay? This is just a convenient tool for putting this constant so that you can solve the equation. You just lift this flat direction. See, any gauge theory will have the solutions of the equations of motion in any gauge theory will have flat directions. And if you are trying to solve the full set of equations of motion, you don't care that they are these flat directions, right? You can just simply try to solve the full equation. If you want to use an approximation scheme, okay, then you have to lift this flat direction, because otherwise the solution will simply keep fluctuating from one minimum to another, okay, along this direction. So this gauge condition is simply a way to avoid that problem.
If we were looking at the quantum,
yeah. In quantum string field theory, certainly you have to fix gauge, okay, because you want to integrate over only a gauge slice. Okay, you want to integrate about only inequivalent string field configuration. Yeah. In fact, the ghosts have been investigated, and what happens is that the full action, okay, including all the ghosts, okay, has exactly the same form as the string field theory action that I wrote down originally, except that there is no restriction on the ghost number. Okay. You simply relax the ghost number constant on the string field, okay, write down the action. And that is the string field theory action. The fields of non-zero ghost number are simply the ghosts of the second quantized theory.
So it's like a kind of super connection.
Instead of connection, you get super connection. Okay. Okay. So that's what one gets when you try to quantize this open string field theory. Okay. The other aspect of this calculation, which is not necessary but which is convenient, is the following. That we can use a consistent truncation of the action which basically means that we restrict phi to a subspace such that for phi in that subspace, equations of motion of all fields outside this subspace are automatically satisfied. Okay. If this is the case, okay, then we can simply write down a truncated action by restricting phi to this subspace, write down the action, solve the equations of motion, and it is guaranteed that the solution of the equations of motion of this truncated action will be a solution of the equations of motion of the full action, because the equations of motion of the truncated action automatically satisfy the equations of motion of the full action. Okay. And this is a convenient trick, although it's not necessary, because you could try to solve directly the equations of motion of the full action. But this gives some insight into the problem, because what happens is the following, that this allows us to do two things. First of all, restrict to even level states only. Because there is a Z2 symmetry under which the odd level states are odd and the even level states are even. So that certainly cuts down the number of fields by half, nearly half. And the second point is that we can restrict to a universal subspace in which we take only those states obtained from vacuum by ghost oscillators and matter Virasoro generators. Okay, and this is important. In general, if you are looking for the zero momentum states, okay, you will have the states created by ghost oscillators but also arbitrary matter oscillators. What we can show is that if we restrict to this universal subspace where the states are created only by the ghost oscillators and the matter Virasoro generators, okay, then the equations of motion never take you out of this space. Okay. So this is a consistent truncation, okay, and this means that this calculation is completely universal. It doesn't depend on what boundary conformal field theory you have chosen, because the algebra of Virasoro generators is universal. Okay, it's just a C equal to 26 Virasoro algebra. Okay. And that's what allows us to extend these results, okay, not to just string field theory on a DP brain in flat space time, but string field theory in the DP brain in arbitrary curved space time. But as I said, for actual computation, it may or may not be convenient to implement the second restriction, because whereas this is useful for reducing the number of fields, quite often the basis that you choose by using matter oscillators is more convenient to use than the basis that you get by Virasoro generators. Okay, in fact, the Moeller and Taylor result that they obtained at level 1020 used this constraint but didn't use this constraint. But then they verified at the end that the state that they got actually lies in this subspace. Okay, so there is a general argument which says that it has to lie in this subspace. Yeah.
Sorry, why should restriction to that subspace minimize the energy?
Because if you look at the, okay, again, I mean, you are looking for an extremum here, okay, not necessarily a minimum, okay, because you don't know how to, talk about minimum, okay, if you want to minimize, okay, if you want to talk about minimum as a function of one field, you take the tachyon field, integrate out everything else, and then see if the action is minimum as a function of the tachyon field. And the tachyon lies in this subspace. So, since the other directions are basically orthogonal, the fields don't take any value in the other directions, okay. Integrating out those fields do not affect the action at all. Right? That's the meaning of a consistent truncation. That if you classically integrate out fields outside this subspace, you don't affect the classical action in this subspace. Okay, now let me say a few words about verification of other conjectures. So this is what is known at present of the conjecture involving the vacuum configuration. First, let me talk about conjecture 3 because it's not very different from what we have already said. Okay. So the conjecture 3, if you recall, that says that there exist lower dimensional solutions D-brain solutions In particular, we can say d p minus q brain described by phi q. And the precise relation that they have the correct tension is S of phi q minus S of phi naught is so this is tension of p minus q brain. This is the volume, the wall volume of E minus Q brain. And this conjecture has been tested by using exactly similar techniques as level truncation. So you basically look for solutions phi q, which now are no longer space-time independent but depend on one or more spatial directions. Okay, in particular, if you want a dp minus q brain solution, phi q should depend on q of the spatial directions. So phi q carries momentum in q of the directions. So you can no longer use a zero momentum expansion of string fields. Okay, you have to allow the states which carry momentum in these q directions, okay, in which you are trying to form this lump solution. And the trick here is to first try to discretize the momentum along those directions, okay, and then carry out level truncation as it is, okay, as I just described. So the trick is make the momentum labels discrete by taking these q directions to be compact, okay, in particular circles, some chosen radii, okay, and then carry out level truncation, then use a level truncation scheme. So this generates a solution, okay, but this solution is a lump not in infinite dimensional space but on a torus. Okay, it is a lump on a torus, and then you try to make sure that the shape of the lump as well as the actual energy of the lump, okay, as computed from there, does not depend on the radii of the torus. Okay, because here once you discretize to have certain radii, okay, then you are forming the lump on a torus. Okay, but you want to make sure that the answers do not depend on the radius of the torus. In particular, the shape of the lump doesn't depend on the radius, as well as the energy that you calculate doesn't depend on the radius. Because if you put a D0 brain on a torus, or a dp minus k brain on a transverse torus, on a torus transverse to the dp minus k brain, okay, then it doesn't depend on the mass of the d brain, doesn't depend on the size of the transverse directions. Okay, it certainly depends on the size of the tangential directions, because that's the tension contributes there, but not on the transverse direction. So we
there should be some
even for finite, see, for D0 brain, yeah, for a normal soliton there is dependence on R. But for a D brain, it doesn't depend on R. Right? Imagine a D0 brain on a torus of radii R, right? So it's a special feature of the soliton, of these solitons, that it shouldn't depend on the radius. Okay, it wouldn't happen in a normal field theory. Okay? And you do find numerically that it doesn't depend on the radius. Okay. So again, the numerical results. These are quite good for Q equal to 1. Okay, this was done by and this reproduces about 99%, where the best approximation reproduces 99% of the dp minus 1 brain tension. Yeah.
Sure. It's not difficult to vary with the tension that shouldn't be passed on the radius, but you mentioned something like that even the profile.
Yeah, the profile shouldn't depend on the radius for large enough radius. Yeah, so you can take the radius to be large enough, and then you find that the profile becomes more and more independent of the radius. Exactly. Okay, so the profile is exactly Gaussian. I mean, if you plot the tachyon field versus x, you do find that there is a Gaussian profile like this. Well, not exactly Gaussian. It looks like Gaussian. It looks like this. Okay, it can be approximated quite well by a Gaussian. Okay, but it's not exactly Gaussian. Okay. And then for q equal to 2, okay, there are some results, but the analysis certainly becomes more and more difficult as you try to go to higher co-dimension lumps. Okay. So these results are due to okay, and also by Muller. Okay. Here, I think the best result is has a 13% error. Okay, so certainly it's nowhere as close to the co-dimension one lump to the vacuum solution. And the reason that the analysis becomes difficult is because as you have more and more momentum, the number of states keep increasing. Right? You have more and more states below a certain level. Okay. And that makes the analysis difficult. Okay, so finally let me now turn to the second conjecture, which is the most difficult of the three. And this was done by Elwood and Taylor, okay, and a different method, okay, by Elwood both numerical but somewhat different, and I'll try to describe the difference. So what does the conjecture 2 say in this case? It says that Q okay, should have trivial cohomology. Okay. Where, let me define Q again. Q on A is given by Q B on A plus phi naught star A minus 1 to B plus plus minus. So we need to show that this has vanishing cohomology, okay, and you can interpret this in two different ways. Okay, absence of open string state simply says that it should have vanishing cohomology in the Ghost number one sector, because the physical open string states are in Ghost number one sector. But you can also interpret this in a more general sense, that it should have vanishing cohomology in all Ghost number sectors. Okay. And I think this paper studies it on Ghost number one sector. This paper tries to develop an argument which extends it to all Ghost number sectors. Okay. So what is the strategy here? I should perhaps also mention at this stage that, although I will not have time to discuss this, the conjectures 1 and 2 have also been verified in superstring field theory, okay, although at a much cruder level. Okay, I think the best energy for the vacuum that one has got is about 90% of the exact answer. Okay, for the lumps, I don't remember the number, but it's certainly nowhere as close to the accuracy that one has got for the bosonic string theory, but the philosophy is exactly the same. Okay, the tricks are exactly the same. It's just that you have many more fields, and hence the numerical analysis becomes more difficult. Okay, so the strategy that one uses here, okay, is to take the best solution phi naught in level transition scheme. Okay, which means at present it's a level 10-20 solution. Okay. Then we try to construct solutions of Q on A equal to 0 by restricting A of Ghost number 1 to be linear combination of states below a certain level. We call this certain level L. This L has nothing to do with 10-20. Okay, it cannot be more larger than 10, of course, but you choose some L, okay, and define your state space to be simply the space of states below a certain level. Okay, and take A to be an arbitrary linear combination of states in that level and try to find a solution of this equation. Okay, and I think that in practice what is done is to look at the appropriate determinant of a matrix and look for the zeros, and then once you have a zero of the determinant, you look for the eigenvalue. Okay. And here I should add that when you are talking about cohomology, you are no longer restricting ourselves to zero momentum excitations. Okay. Now for studying cohomology, you simply look at the full space. So you allow arbitrary momentum. Now suppose you have found such a solution. Then, in order to show that it has vanishing cohomology, that Q has trivial cohomology, what you need to show is that that state can be rewritten as Q on something else. That there exists a state B in H0 such that Okay, this is what one needs to show. But this is, if you are using a level truncated solution, okay, then this is not never exactly true. And the reason is that Q square, okay, is only is not exactly equal to zero exactly in level truncation. It's only approximately zero. As you increase the level of approximation, Q square becomes closer and closer to zero. But if you have restricted, if your solution is only approximate, Q square is only approximately zero. Okay. So you cannot expect to get a state B for which this is exactly true. Okay. Instead, what we try to show is that there exists a state B, so that B, okay, such that A minus QB, okay, is close to zero. Okay. And when one says it's close to zero, one has to use some notion of a norm. So define some kind of norm and compare this with the norm of A. And you try to show that this is much, much less than one. Now this of course causes some complication, because as I already told you, that there is no natural norm in the space of states of host number 1. Okay, the BPZ norm pairs a state of host number 1 to a state of host number 2. Okay. Furthermore, BPZ norm is not positive definite, so you want to use some positive definite norm. So what Elwood and Taylor did was to simply say that we choose some positive definite norm. Okay, just arbitrarily define a positive definite norm and see if under that norm you can find a state B which satisfies this. And then they verified that it doesn't really matter what norm you choose. They tried two different norms and the results didn't really vary as we went from one norm to another. Okay. So basically what they showed is that at least for low-lying states, okay, which means that if you restrict for states with k square less than or equal to l minus 1, okay, all q closed states are more than 99% q exact. Which means that there is some state B, okay, so that this ratio is less than 0.01. Okay. K is the momentum. Yeah. So K square is just K mu. So the idea is that if you have, defined your subspace by restricting to states below a certain level, you cannot expect this to hold to arbitrary large value of K. Right, for that you need to include states of higher level. So you look at, you fix your level, right? Then for that fixed level you look at the low lying states, and you find that at least in the low lying states, okay, there are no elements of the BRSTK homology. Which basically means in physical language that if you are looking for physical state, there are no states of mass square less than L minus 1. Okay, if there can be physical states of mass square larger than L minus 1, but not less than L minus 1. Okay, and maybe just a few minutes I'll spend describing the other approach. this identity state should not be confused with the identity operator. Okay, I have conformal field theory. So this identity state is a spatial state which I'll denote by I. Okay, this is a state of host number 0, okay, which has the property that the inner product of I with any state A is A itself. For every A in H. Okay, not necessarily in ghost number 1 subspace, but for any state. Okay. Now, there is such a state in the vector space of states. Okay. There are many ways of defining, of describing this state. As we saw, there are many ways of describing the star product. Okay. So, one way of describing this state, okay, is by calculating its inner product. Okay, say for any state phi in the conformal field theory, we can specify this, and this one simpler to write this is that this is H naught dot phi of 0 on the disk, unit disk, okay, where H naught z is 1 plus I z over 1 minus I z square. Okay. And if you want, you can regard also this also as a map on the, I mean, a correlation function on the upper half plane. Okay, simply by bringing this map back to the upper half plane. Okay, I think there you write this as F naught dot EHP. If I remember correctly, F naught of z is something like 2z over 1 minus z square, but I am not totally sure about this, but you can certainly pull it back to the upper half plane and see what map one gets. Okay, this is one way of describing the identity state. Okay. There are other ways. The intuitive way is by specifying a functional of the fields. Okay. So the wave functional for the identity state is simply a delta function . So what it does is to basically identify the left and right half of the state string. Phi of sigma from 0 to pi by 2 is the first half of the string, from pi by 2 to pi is the second half of the string, and it's basically identifying the two halves. Okay. And finally, there is a concrete way of writing this, starting from the expression here. Okay. Using this expression, one can explicitly write down an expression for the identity state, okay, which in fact was first written down by these people, okay, where they tried to use the identity state, and that is the following. You have product n equal to 2 to infinity where L is these are the total Virasoro of generators. And one has to specify in which order they ascend, because the L's don't commute. So it's, sorry, L minus 2 here. Okay. So it's L minus 2 first, then L minus 4, then L minus 8, L minus 16, and so on. Okay, that's the way it goes up. Okay, so what is the use of the identity state? The use of the identity state is the following. Okay. That suppose we can show that the identity state, which I should have said is annihilated by Q, at least formally, Okay. Suppose we can show that the identity state is Q-trivial. Show that the identity state is Q-trivial. Suppose there exists state K such that K has to belong to H minus 1, such that the identity state is Q on K. Yeah, at least formally you can show that the it's QB closed. Okay, that you can certainly show. Okay. And then the rest of Q, okay, which is phi naught star I minus I star phi naught, okay, that is zero because phi naught star I is the same as I star phi naught. Okay. But that's true that you explicitly see for Fox based states. Since you don't know what the solution is analytically, right? We cannot really explicitly make sure that for QB it's clear, exactly. That's right. Because QB simply passes through the LNs, right? And it acts on the vacuum and annihilates it. Yeah.
Sure. Imagine that you take this open string and you split it into two halves, one of them is in New York, one of them is in Santa Barbara. And this delta function still has non zero support on such split string. Because it doesn't care about the continuity of the string at all.
Yeah.
Is this intuitive reason why this state is not the real element of the
filter type, the normal element? See, again, in ghost number zero sector, right, you don't know how to define a norm. Right? So you don't have a norm anyway. Right? So it's not clear what one should check to decide whether the state is a good state or a bad state. Right? Meaning, what is the meaning of a good state is not a priori clear.
Okay, so take some C naught or something.
Yeah, if you take C0, C1, C-1, okay? If you take this object, I, C0, C1, C-1, I, okay? This, I think, is just 1. Okay? Take the primed correlation function. Because what happens is this, okay, no, this is not 1, sorry. If you take this object, C del C del square C of P, okay, of any point, okay, then this is 1 because what happens is that this is the primary of dimension 0, okay, and you can just take all the L minus N's, pull to the left, all the LN's pull to the right, okay, the total L doesn't have any central charge, right, so during this manipulation you do not pick up any extra contribution except the LN's themselves. Okay. And at the end of the manipulation, all you are left with is simply 0 C del C del square C 0, which is 1. So if you try to define the norm this way, then it has norm 1. Okay. But there are other ways of defining the norm in which it doesn't have norm 1. Okay. In fact, in which you have infinite norm. Okay. So let's see why this helps. Okay. So suppose identity is Q times Q on K. Okay. Then, okay, if Q on A is 0, okay, then it's clear that A can be written as Q on K star A. Okay. Why? Because you simply use the distribution property of Q, which he said is valid for any solution. Okay. So this is Q K star A plus K star Q A. Okay. This is 0 because A is Q closed. Okay. And this is its identity. Right. So this is A. So if one can show that the identity is Q trivial, okay, then you have shown once and for all that Q has vanishing cohomology. Okay. And this is what these people set out to do. They took this expression for I, okay, and tried to check numerically by going up to certain number of levels that this is Q trivial. Okay. It's not QB trivial, okay, certainly, because QB does have non-trivial cohomology. Okay. But it could still be Q trivial, and that's what they checked, so basically you compute. In, yeah, for QB, exactly. That's right, yeah. Yeah, exactly, that's right. Yeah, because identity, if you look at this this expression, right, there it starts from the vacuum plus higher order terms, and you can show that all the higher terms are in vanishing cohomology. Okay, so the vacuum does contribute, exactly. Okay, so what they did then is to check that, so numerically check to take I up to a given level, and then check that there is a exists some state K, okay, such that I minus QK, okay, again you have to compare the norm up to given that level, again to some arbitrary norm, okay, that this is much much less than 1. Okay, and they did find that this norm does go to 0, okay, which means that the identity seems to be trivial under this Q.
You mentioned
arbitrary norms? Yeah, an arbitrary. They again tested 2 different norms, okay, and they found that it doesn't really matter which norm you choose.
So I take it that the fact that the subject
is currently in numerical state is an indication that after looking at all these formulas, there will be any pattern. Well, yeah, people have tried and there is no pattern, exactly. But I'll discuss tomorrow. Okay, that there is an analytic approach, but it's an indirect analytic approach. Okay, so that's what will be the focus of the talk tomorrow. So I think this is the end of today's lecture. Yeah.
I just have a question about the universality of verification of conjectures 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So this is truncation to Gauss states and Verzuro states. Then you say, but if you're doing the computation, use a specific model, the field theory.
Yeah.
Is it clear that the computation itself is only dependent on the Verzuro output?
Yeah, because you can choose a basis which involves only the Verzuro generators, right? And then all the correlation functions that you need to do, calculate, are correlation functions of the ghost fields and the matter Verzuro generators, matter energy momentum tensors. And that's the universal computation. Right? It only cares about the total central charge of the matter Virazoros, which is always 26. So if you set up the computation that way, then it's clearly universal. Yeah.
So in terms of conjecture 1, I suppose all this numerical evidence supports the idea that there's only one extremum, one non-trivial.
Yeah. Okay. See, the point is, if you do this Siegel gauge fixing, okay, then it turns out that there are other extremum, but they don't behave well in the level truncation. But in a given order in level truncation, you do find other minimum. Okay, but then when you try to test the validity of the Siegel gauge, okay, in other words, when you try to test that the fields which you had set to zero by fixing Siegel gauge condition, that their equations of motion are automatically satisfied, you find that happens only for this particular solution. All these other extremum that you find, okay, have the property that they don't satisfy the full set of equations of motion. Okay, so they are in some sense artifacts of Siegel gauge fixing. Yeah, you want to say something?
It may well be that there are other solutions corresponding to things like multiple D-brains, which have not been found, but they presumably lie outside the finding single gauge region of validity.
Yeah, so far all efforts to find multiple D-brains using the numerical approach has failed.